Well, these are bad times, and I was out in California 3 weeks ago, and I was looking for some political inspiration. I was visiting an old friend and my former partner, Jim Lafferty, who's acting in the Lawyers Guild out there, and we decided to drive out to Yorba Linda, California. You know what's in Yorba Linda, California? Richard Nixon's final resting place, the place where he was born, and the Richard Nixon Historical Library. So we thought if we went out there, maybe we could get some answers to these troubling political questions. And I'd recommend it to everybody. It's only an hour south of Los Angeles. We got there. We were greeted at the door by a Pat Nixon lookalike dressed in red, white, and blue, handing out color photographs of Pat Nixon, Nancy Reagan, and Betty Ford. And it got better. Because every person that worked there was dressed and looked similarly. It's like the Stepford Wives, and you walk in there, and the first thing that you get to is the gift shop. So we went into the gift shop. It's about a third of the size of this room, and I'm not exaggerating when I tell you that half of the merchandise, and you know, as Mel Brooks says, it's all about merchandising, half of the merchandise there are photographs of the day that Elvis met Nixon. Beach towels, beer mugs, shot glasses, pencils, notepapers, t-shirts, baseball hats. And I was staggered by this. And I went over to the manager of the store and I said, "Do you know that the day that Elvis met Nixon, Elvis was totally drugged out, and so was Nixon. Nixon was popping Dilantin, which is an anti-seizure medicine that his friend Alfred Bloomingdale, who owns Bloomingdale's, recommended to him. And Elvis came and he presented Nixon with a silver pistol and 7 bullets, and Nixon presented Elvis with a badge making him an officer in the war against drugs." I recounted this story to the lady, and she said to me, "You know, we all know that. That's why we sell this stuff." So this inspired me to pursue Richard Nixon even further, and I read Anthony Summers' excellent biography called The Arrogance of Power. And in there you'll find a story about an interview with Nixon. The interviewer said that President Nixon, can you tell us the secret of your political success? And unhesitatingly, Nixon replied, "Fear. It's fear. You instill fear in people. And they don't teach you that in the Boy Scouts." And that's, I think, very, very true. It's certainly true in the trials that Bill Kunstler recounts in this book that Michael and I are working on. Bombings, fear of bombings, the Red Scare during and after the First World War. Tom Mooney, who was the head of the left wing of the labor movement in California, was indicted for a bombing, and they actually in court produced a photograph of Tom Mooney standing behind a clock at a street corner, so you knew when and where he was at a certain time, which happened to be the time of the bombing. He was 6 blocks away, and they still convicted him. And it took 20 years to get him pardoned. Sacco and Vanzetti, also convicted against the weight of the evidence, also pardoned. The Rosenbergs, also convicted and executed it was a hoax because there was some framed up evidence there, but it's clear now historically that they had nothing to do with passing the secret of the atomic bomb, which the judge said caused the death of 50,000 people. It had nothing to do with that. And they knowingly executed the mother of 2 children. And that's the kind of results that this all-powerful government can get in a climate of fear. I just want to make one reference to a law which will give you an idea of where this panel's going, and then I'll introduce Clark. This law is not a law that you're going to find in the statute books of the state of New York, and it's not a law that appears in the federal laws either. It's a law that was formulated by a German philosopher about 150 years ago, talking about Hegel, And it's a dialectical law. It's the kind of law that we can discuss here amongst comrades. Not the kind of law that we would discuss at the Trial Lawyers Association, but I think the kind of law that you would appreciate. And one of Hegel's principles of dialectics was that quantity turns eventually into quality. That something that's possible eventually becomes inevitable. You know, the Weimar Republic had a constitution that was the most democratic constitution in Europe. And 15 years later, they had Hitler. At a certain point, and I think the point was probably when the Nazis staged the burning of the Reichstag, the German parliament, at a certain point, the loss of liberties in Germany became irreversible. And I'm not saying that we have that situation in the United States. Clearly we don't, or we wouldn't be meeting here. But we're moving in a direction where the police and the state are more and more intertwined, and that we have less and less of a chance of organizing ourselves in their defense. Witness indicting an attorney for representing a client. We're moving in that direction, and that's the outline of this panel. And each one of our panelists is going to speak about a picture of that. And I hope at the end of an hour, you'll get an idea of how the constriction of civil liberties has proceeded pretty quick in the last 25 years and very quick since after September 11th. The agenda of the far right was handed stuff on a silver platter after the attack on those buildings. And they certainly took it up with respect to civil liberties. And that's what we're going to talk about. Clark is going to first give you an outline of how it went along.